the Sports Coaching Podcast with Sam Holmshaw.
Okay, welcome back to the latest episode of the Sports Coaching Podcast with me, Sam Holmshaw. Been a while since, you know, the last episode we had. It's been about 4 weeks, I believe, which is quite a long time. Remember the days of lockdown when we were churning out a podcast every week. Busy man, so I don't get that luxury anymore. But my guest today, Lauren, who I've made the usual mistake, Lauren, of not asking how to pronounce your surname. So I'm not going to attempt to do that on a podcast, let me tell you. But I've never had to rearrange so many times with a guest. I was just saying to Lauren beforehand, usually, you know, pick a date and you get a time sorted, and sometimes you might have to arrange maybe two, but I think long we've rearranged maybe four times my fault, so apologies for that. It's really great to have you on the podcast, but I'll let you introduce yourself and pronounce your own surname so I don't make a mess of it. But Lauren, great to have you on the podcast. How are you? How was everything at your end?
Oh, well, Sam, thank you so much for having me. My surname, or my last name, is pronounced Ammon, so pretty easy, but can be kind of tricky. Doing really well today. No judgment here in terms of how many things had to be rescheduled. You know, now that things are hopefully calming down and things are getting back somewhat to normal, you know, things are popping up, things happen, life gets busy, and here we are.
Certainly does, and we're really excited to get on with this podcast. I mean, I'll talk about the topic in a little while, but this is going to be a really good episode today. I've just got a feeling for it. That's not how I would have pronounced your surname, so I'm glad I didn't attempt it. But as I said, it's absolutely fantastic to have you on. As we always do with the guests and introducing themselves, if you wouldn't mind, Lauren, just telling us a bit about yourself, obviously your background, you know, your involvement with coaching or the sporting world, a bit about, you know, where you're currently based as well. Obviously, we're talking from across the pond, which is always amazing to me. You know, it just amazes me that modern day technology, you can just have a conversation with someone in a completely different time zone. If you wouldn't mind, Lauren, just tell us a bit about yourself, your background, and I guess what's led you to where you are today. That would be fantastic.
Yeah. So actually, I always joke because this story starts when I was 5 years old. When my mom threw me into a swimming pool because my older sisters were already at a swim meet and she needed something to do with me because I incessantly asked for money to buy things from the concession stand. And 17 years later, I graduated from Eastern Michigan University, a prestigious college over here in the United States, as team captain, as a high school state championship and a top three finisher in the Mid-American Conference, which was the conference that my school is in, and absolutely loved every single thing about those 17 years of swimming. I am one of the rare birds is that I was a single sport athlete. I had some cross country or long distance running in there for a little bit, but I always say I was a swimmer, right? Cross country was just a fun little thing I did on the side to try it out and found out I really loved it. But I always had dreams of swimming in college. And so that was my choice when, you know, kind of the rubber met the road. Much like any athlete, the transition out of athletics was a challenging one, though at the time, I didn't necessarily realize how challenging it was. But, you know, I got my master's degree in human resources, and I spent about 15 years in that field in the corporate world and found it just wasn't my place. I mean, I had a lot of success. It just wasn't my passion. And being exposed to executive coaching in that line of work, I thought, well, this seems kind of interesting. But at the time, I didn't necessarily make the link between my competitive world and coaching, right? But I mean, it can be fairly similar. So I took about a year to get my certification and did a lot of self-discovery. And that's where I realized that a lot of my troubles leading to that day was never really properly mourning my transition out of sport. Opened my business to really focus on leadership development and career transition, which during the pandemic was crazily successful, right? But found that it just still wasn't my passion. And then just so happens, as the universe would have it, a week before the 2020 Olympics started, I happened to say to a business mentor of mine, I wonder what it would be like to work with athletes. And fast forward to the night that Simone Biles removed herself from competition in gymnastics. And it was the same night that Katie Ledecky, a prestigious US swimmer, won gold in the 1500 meter freestyle, the first time the women had ever swam it, and had a really disappointing swim and was trying everything in her power to hide that disappointment at the time. And then Michael Phelps came on our broadcast, at least, and said, competing at this level is really overwhelming. We just want someone to talk to. We just want someone who listens and who allows us to be vulnerable and doesn't want to fix us. And Sam, to say that I had a very visceral reaction to that, I sat there in my chair crying, listening to the most prolific Olympian I'll ever know in my lifetime say, we kind of have no one. And so in that moment, I completely shifted my business to focus on athletes and to work with them to train their minds like they train their bodies, and found that in this line of work, there's also a great deal of opportunity to work with coaches and the athletes' parents to support them in that endeavor.
Oh, you can tell I'm out of practice with the mute button taking a bit of time. Absolutely fascinating. A lot of stuff, certainly, that I resonate with. There was a swimmer myself, thrown into it maybe at five, ended up swimming for Sheffield, my city. And that was, a crazy period up until the age of, I think it was about 13, 14 when I ended up calling it a day. But seven times a week, I always tell the story, a huge commitment. Didn't have too much of a social life because it's, school, swimming afterwards, every single day, your weekend swimming. It does take up time. So I can't imagine from going to, from being five yourself to, I think you said 21, 22 it would have been when you
yeah.
That's remarkable. A lot of stuff you'll see I'm sort of nodding there and listening. A lot of the listeners will be probably thinking, that's quite early to have challenges when you've decided, you've left swimming at a young age. But you do generally, retire quite young at swimming compared to other sports and other disciplines. So that's certainly really interesting. And I think the thing that I resonate the most with is what you're just saying there towards the end. Swimming, I don't know about your experience. My experience as a kid was it was very isolated environment, very individualistic. In contrast, when I sort of moved away from swimming and became a youth football or youth soccer player for the American listeners, that was completely different for me because it was suddenly a team environment and all about the team. When I look back at my time as a swimmer, and obviously wouldn't have realized this at the time, but probably went through bits of depression and loneliness and wasn't actually aware of going through that. But when I think back, there was some difficult times. So, that's absolutely fascinating, Lauren. So I'd really like to just dive a little bit more into your business and, talk a bit more about the work that you do. And I think probably the most important question to ask you is, why is this important work? Because sometimes people watching on, they sort of don't really understand how much, this thing up here in our skull is important, particularly at high level sports performance.
Yeah, the why is really simple. Is that when I was an athlete, I retired, even saying out loud to myself, there was so much more I could have given. And it wasn't physically, it was mentally. I graduated conscious that there was another way to think and be, but totally unconscious in how to do it. And that is my why, is exactly what you're talking about too. I mean, in sports, I would argue that no matter if it is individual or team, there can be this state of loneliness, particularly if you are struggling as an athlete in the terms of not meeting the times or the performance that you want, potentially not having a coach that understands or not having parents who understand. And that's not a knock on any of those parties. It's that, we're all human and we're all going through our own things. And sometimes it's really hard to articulate what we're thinking and feeling, particularly as an athlete, because right, if I open up and I show signs of quote unquote weakness, and I say that in quotes because it's not a form of weakness, but it can be very challenging for an athlete to separate that thought of, oh my gosh, I'm the only one going through this. I can't possibly open up to my teammates because if they see a crack in the foundation, that can be seen as a competitive disadvantage. They'll start to work on being better than me and then I'll lose even more footing. Or if I open up to my coach and I don't have a great relationship with him or her, what that can do, are they just going to tell me to get over it, move on, you're fine, which by the way, happened when I was growing up. And I don't knock any of my coaches, But I think it's just there was no awareness that, hey, there's a different way to be. There's a different way to think. And there's a different way to build relationships with athletes to allow them the opportunity to feel that psychological safety. That is really truly the why. Those two words, psychological safety, for athletes, even at a younger age, to learn there is a different way to think. You don't have to believe every thought that comes through your head, particularly the self-deprecating ones, or those that make you question whether you're worthy of the success you actually want. And, you know, again, growing up, not having a ton of these resources, I mean, sure, sports psychologists existed, but I was just telling someone the other day, even in college, we had one, but he was never brought in to support athletes individually. It was more that there were 25, 18 to 22 year old women who, as you can imagine, didn't always get along all the time. And so he was brought in from more that team culture, that team cohesion versus supporting each individual with their own head trash.
That's me late on the mute button again. Apologies for the listeners. But yeah, again, a lot of nodding, very fascinating. I mean, I remember you mentioned Simone Biles, you know, just previously. And when that all sort of came out and she decided to withdraw, there was certainly like, I always feel like a bit of a mixed reaction to that. And I think people who were coaches and athletes themselves really commended her for that. I certainly thought it was absolutely fantastic. But there was like the sort of general public were kind of thinking, well, hang on a minute, she's the best in the world. Why would she, you know, remove herself from that competition? She's got a chance at winning an Olympic gold medal. And I remember a sort of similar conversation about 18 months as we sort of entered lockdown and The Last Dance came out on Netflix with Michael Jordan.
Yeah.
A similar sort of topic of discussion was, why did he retire initially at 30 years old? This guy's at the top of his game. He's absolutely incredible. But you're right, you know, that sort of, you know, I guess, culture of it's okay to not be okay. You know, you were just saying that it wasn't there when you were growing up. I'm 25, you know, 9 years out of high school, if you like. That wasn't around when I was at school. It didn't really exist. You couldn't really talk about your feelings or mentally how you were. You know, I mentioned I was involved in football or soccer in my later years. The sort of culture in football here, because it's the biggest sport, is you get on with it. You know, if you've got an injury, you have to get on with it. If you're not feeling good, you have to get on with it, because it's all about giving everything and, you know, dying for the team, quote unquote. And actually, you know, there's a lot of stuff wrong with that. And it's something that I've, you know, been a part of discussion on podcasts like this. Something that I think, I don't know about obviously in the States, but I know over here it's getting better and more awareness and coach education. But still, I certainly know from a, you know, and I'll always talk from a football soccer side because I'm, you know, involved in it. But that change is happening, but it's a slow change because, you know, the word you mentioned, culture, the culture here is it's all about winning, and, you know, we invented this sport and we have to be the best of it, and, you know, you have to give everything. And actually, you know, I'm looking at a couple of professional football players at the minute. Want to mention Marcus Rashford at Manchester United. I don't know if you're familiar with him or not, Lauren, but he's going through quite a tough time at the period. And the first thing I'm thinking as a coach is, what's his mental state?
Right.
Being, you know, correctly supported with this mental state, when you're seeing all these fans on Twitter and pundits and, you know, talking about he's not performing well and, you know, too much off the field stuff. He's done a lot of work for charity through lockdown. And, you know, it's you know, none of us have been there. Obviously yourself, you've had a successful athletic career. Myself, I had a good career as a young swimmer until 13. Very average career as a football. Obviously, I was also single sport until 13. But now as a coach and I'm working with young performers, it's amazing, actually, when you put yourselves in their shoes, how much pressure are they going through? Mm-hmm. And you can never fully understand that unless you're that person themselves. So, I mean, you'll find throughout this podcast, Lauren, I'm sort of bad at just, you know, talking and talking and bobbling on without actually giving you a question. But I guess the real question is, how important, when we're sort of thinking about culture, and I know we're probably going to talk a bit about this later in more detail, but why is it important for coaches to start thinking about creating a culture that sort of accepts that, you know, that phrase, it's okay to not be okay as such? You know, why is it important that we do that in the year of 2022?
Yeah, well, you hit the nail on the head, is that One, it's starting to become more and more apparent that the idea of just get on with it doesn't really work. I mean, how many professional athletes on anywhere in the world are starting to raise their hand and saying, I'm not all right. And then when things happen in a competition, there are literally no resources for these athletes. You know, for, you know, American listeners, right? When Kevin Love, he's a professional basketball player, right? Had an episode on the court, and he even did an interview with a morning show over here. And the interviewer even said, yeah, and the NBA didn't have anything for you, right? Not just at the time, but across the board. And so this idea of culture, we're starting at the very epicenter of where athletes are and where they constantly go every single day. That is the most important, because that's where they're walking in. Like, that is where they feel most comfortable, even when they're uncomfortable. And the idea of building a culture and coaches tuning into, okay, this is now a part, this is a shift in the dynamic of sports and athletics. I now serve a deeper purpose in creating a culture where being uncomfortable mentally is okay, right? We're all in the same page, like being uncomfortable physically, right? We've all accepted that because it's the expectation, right? So now it's an opportunity to create the expectation that culture not only, you know, deals with uncomfortability or uncomfortableness in physically, but the discomfort being mental as well. And knowing that, again, any athlete who's been through it, regardless of what level you've been on, whether it's, you know, as a club athlete or high school or college or even beyond that, the pressure exists, right? And, you know, Michael Phelps said competing at this level, meaning the Olympic level, is overwhelming. I argue competing at any level is overwhelming because it's your level, right? It's relative to your talent, your skills. And so creating this culture of psychological safety is incredibly important because, one, we see that athletes are challenged to deal with it, right? And I always say that, you know, not all heroes wear capes, but hey, all athletes are still human, right? And they go through the human condition and human experiences. And to allow them the opportunity to speak up and to know that not being okay is okay. And when it happens, so happens to be on the global stage, that there is more support than there is detraction. Because as you mentioned with Simone Biles, I mean, heck, I was on Instagram. I don't remember what account it was, but how many people were saying, how could she do this? If she knew this, she just took the opportunity away from another gymnast, right? I'm sure she was struggling. I mean, you know, having gone through the pandemic, also having have to come out publicly about what she experienced with, you know, sexual abuse, right? Which I'm sure she, you know, you scratch that itch and a lot of psychological challenges come with it. Add to it being isolated during the pandemic, not being able to compete or to be able to practice or compete as you once were. And then you come on this international stage. And oh, by the way, I would venture to guess 99.99% of the people who detracted against her have never stepped onto any competitive field of any kind. And again, this global stage where she truly is the greatest of all time and doing things that a lot of people only dream of doing, right? And oftentimes what isn't apparent is all the things that go on behind the scenes with athletes. And so creating a culture where they feel comfortable to get really uncomfortable even mentally is so crucial, because it's probably the one or few places where it's acceptable. Because everywhere else, it may not be.
It truly is fascinating. I mean, the sort of figurehead, if you like, of, I guess, this sort of awareness into you know, the mental state of high-level sports performance over in England is Tyson Fury. You know, I think at 27, he'd won 4 belts in the heavyweight division, beat Klitschko, unbelievable fight. I remember watching it. And then, you know, that was him done. because all his life, all he'd ever sort of had was that goal. And suddenly he reaches that goal and he's finally achieved it at 27. And he's, you know, he's got all this money, he's got this great family. And, you know, obviously he's spoken about this himself. And then suddenly it's, well, what do I do now? And, you know, that sort of, you know, similar to process, probably what you were saying about, you know, your time after you've left, how do you deal with that? And, you know, you're right. There's so many different factors that the general, you know, public, general people, we don't know about. We don't know what's happened behind this. And you talk about Simone Biles there. Followed her case quite a lot, actually, over the last 2 or 3 years. And you sort of think the stuff she must have gone through mentally. I think she's absolutely remarkable. As you're saying, you know, you've got all these other factors, like you say, isolation for a year, you know, not competing in front of people. And then suddenly you're there and this fan's there and it's you know, wow. You know, it's absolutely incredible. But, you know, that's really fascinating. And I think what's good with sort of Tyson's journey is he's really open and spoke about it. And now people are starting to go, actually, you know, there's a lot more awareness and that's a real positive. But I really like how you mentioned competing at any level. You know, I, 3 years ago, got involved in amateur women's football, amateur women's soccer. I was coaching at the, you know, the lowest level in English women's football. We had players that had never played football before at 20, 21, 22. And often what you'll find in soccer over here is, or football over here is, there's so much focus on technical and tactical progression. And the mental stuff is always forgotten about. But obviously, even more so at the lowest level of the low, because you think, oh, they're just coming here for a bit of fun to play. And, you know, what is there to be nervous about? You know, the brand new to football. But actually what I found was a lot of athletes found that very difficult. You know, these are athletes competing at a world level in front of millions and millions of people on the TV, or so many thousands in a stadium. They're competing in front of 30 people on a field, you know, somewhere in England. But to them, that's huge. And, you know, I found that actually tapping into people's mental states and helping them and, you know, getting them to feel a lot more comfortable was massive. And that was a massive sort of thing to me in my, you know, younger days as a coach, of how important, well, actually, this is such a huge, important area, the psychological or psychosocial area.
The Sports Coaching Podcast with Sam Holmshaw.
So support for the Sports Coaching Podcast is brought to you by Manscaped, who is the best in men's below-the-waist grooming. Manscaped offers precision-engineered tools for your family jewels. Manscaped recently launched the Ultimate Men's Hygiene Bundle, the Performance Package. Join over 4 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped with this exclusive offer for you. 20% off and free worldwide shipping with the code SCPOD. That's the code SCPOD at manscaped.com. So yeah, Lauren, absolutely fascinating. So I'll move it on, you know, before I sort of talk all day here. As you know, the listeners will have guessed, the topic today is all about how do we create a culture for both coaches and athletes. Now, I don't know about you, Lauren, I find that culture is almost a bit of a voodoo word. It's one of those words that might have a lot of different meanings to different people. I think that it doesn't always make sense. You know, I speak about it quite a lot, particularly in coaching, and I found that people have different understandings or I guess attach different meanings to what the word culture means. So I think it would be great, Lauren, actually, if you could start, you know, this, you know, into the second segment as we run into this. But what is culture? What does it mean? I suppose the question is, what is, you know, your conception of culture or your perception of culture? But what is that? What does that word mean? And why is that important in coaching and coaching practice?
Yeah, well, this is where a lot of my experiences really come together. So having worked in HR for nearly a decade and a half, right, this concept of culture on the corporate side, it's consistently came up. You know, how do we perfect it? How do we optimize it? How do we get people to buy into it? And, you know, as I went through this in the same, you know, it can fluctuate whether it's corporate athletics or no matter what the context is. But to me, culture is the actions, attitudes, and attributes that are embraced and or tolerated within the group. And by that, I mean, the reason that I say it that way is that, you know, oftentimes it's identified or defined as kind of the shared things, right? But I don't necessarily believe that it starts out as being shared, right? I think it becomes shared. But what it is, you know, of those, of the leaders of the organization, whatever that organization is, it's the actions, attitude, and attributes that are embraced and or tolerated. So the ones that really serve the individual and or team or carries them forward, or the ones that are toxic, negative. And that's what I mean by tolerated, right? You know, so when we allow these things that logically we know go against what the organization wants or is working toward, but again, are tolerated because either they don't want to be addressed or the leaders don't necessarily see them as being toxic, but others see them as being toxic, right? You know, because oftentimes you see that toxicity more so at a lower level, whereas when things are good and they're embraced, everyone sees them. And so that's what I believe is the definition of culture, and why that's so important is because that culture links directly to performance, regardless of what position you hold in that organization. That culture and how each individual person interprets it and sees it, experiences it, has a direct correlation with how they perform, whether that's in the corporate world, or in this case, whether it's on an athletic field, a pitch, a pool, whatever the case may be.
I really like that definition, actually. I mean, the way I always think about culture is, you know, the way that things are done, you know, what sort of happens in this team environment, this individual environment, this club. What's the way of doing things, as you say, what's accepted behaviours, accepted actions, attributes. I really like that as well. And what's tolerated. And actually, that's really interesting because, you know, me as a coach, maybe had, you know, 10 or 11 different coaching roles over the last 10 years. And what I always find is that you when you move into a new culture, a new team, the culture is different. So, you know, myself sort of growing up as a coach, I had certain expectations. One of those would be that, you know, if the coach talks, players keep the ball still. You know, if they go for a water break, they leave the balls. What kind of shocked me in my early coaching career was sort of turning up to a team and finding that, you know, well, I'm talking and these players are playing around with a ball, or said the water break and they're shooting at the nets or whatever. And that took me a long time to understand that that was the accepted culture. You know, that's what they'd done for years. No coach had ever sort of, you know, established those boundaries, I guess is the word. But, you know, that's, if you like, more from sort of what happens. But I think what's really interesting about what you just said is sort of the psychological area. So you talk about what's tolerated. I was at teams, I've coached teams, you know, where I've allowed, I would say I've tolerated players having a go at another player. You know, be that a halftime team talk afterwards. Nowadays, these things, it's quite easy to, you know, slag someone off or have a go at someone. But actually, you know, I've realized at times where I haven't challenged that behavior and it becomes accepted. And actually over time I've witnessed, and, you know, it's something I'm not very best pleased about now, even sort of educated myself a bit more with, but that can lead to players leaving the team, not feeling comfortable in what they're doing. It can lead to players, you know, even having forms of depression. And it's certainly something, you know, in terms of, like you said, why is it important? Well, we have to be aware of what actions are we tolerating? Are these actions positive? Are they negative? And sort of through that, how is that affecting the athlete? So,
you know, again, going back to that, you know, why culture is so important is, to me, it's the main ingredient of performance. It directly correlates, like whatever culture is accepted or is present in an organization, it directly links to performance, whether it is in the corporate world or whether it's in the athletic field, pitch, pool. And that's why it's so incredibly important, is that the way that it's interpreted by each individual and how it's experienced directly relates to how they show up and truly what runs through their head because of it. Do they feel supported and safe and thus contributing to a higher level of performance because those two things are linked? Or do they constantly feel stressed under the gun, under a microscope, which can directly link to tense muscles, which, as we know, kind of that mind-muscle connection, right? Which will directly affect how they show up in the sport and thus create a situation where they aren't even at the baseline of their performance potential. They're below it because their muscles and mind are responding in a way that doesn't allow them to reach their full potential.
Yeah, I really like the saying of main ingredient for performance. So true. And it took me a long time to realize that. It took me quite a long time to understand the impact of how someone's feeling through this culture. You know, when I first got into coaching, Lauren, I was a bit of a drill sergeant, you know, sort of one of those, if you like, what you might see in the army. And quickly understand that that didn't work, but what it did give is a sort of culture of set behavior. So what was deemed as poor behavior, whether that was, you know, telling someone off, having a go at someone, arguing, that never happened. And as a result of that, with that team, it was a fairly nice balance of friendships. There wasn't really any cliques. Everyone sort of got on and they all seemed to feel comfortable on that pitch. In contrast, at another team I coached, I kind of allowed, you know, people having a go at each other because I thought it was beneficial. I thought it was probably bringing the best out of each other at the time. When I reflect on that now, I realized that that wasn't an ingredient for performance or a good ingredient. It was, you know, like you say, the main ingredient in that case, it was really negative. It was making those players feel uncomfortable on the pitch. They didn't feel, as you say, in a safe, secure environment. And they played within themselves. And at the time, I couldn't really understand that. Actually, when I reflect on that now, it really does tell me how important actually the culture is. You know, it's pretty much everything that you do. So, I mean, that's really interesting. And I think the question what I'd love to ask you actually would be, if we're a coach, how do we sort of determine what a good culture is? How do we determine a positive culture? And I think, you know, a second question, which I'll ask you again, just in case you forget, but I'm bad at doing this, is if it is a bad culture, how does one go about changing that? Because I must admit, I've been in some cultures I've seen and I've not liked the attitudes or the behaviours and found them a bit negative. But I must admit, I found that quite challenging in changing that. And sometimes it can be a difficult thing to actually do in person than talk about on a podcast. So I'd love to hear your thoughts about both of those questions, Lauren.
Yeah, I actually think the answer is the same. And part of that has to do, it really starts with the mental foundation of the coach, him or herself. So doing a lot of the inner work as on you as a coach. And one of the things that I've really started talking about and, you know, as part of the process is, as a coach, what culture do you want? You know, oftentimes there's just this generic, and this isn't a bad thing, right? I mean, it's the sports world has conditioned us to, you win, you lose, you know, you're a successful team if you win, you're not if you lose, right? And so a lot of coaches are, we're all about winning, we're all about resilience, we're all about, insert your quote unquote standard sports language. But what I think takes that to the whole new level is if you sit down as a coach and identify and root through, what are your core beliefs? What are your core values? Because no matter if you're conscious of them or not, they dictate how you run your life. And so it's a really powerful exercise for coaches to sit down and say, if I want to have fun in this environment, if I want to feel psychologically safe, if I want to optimize performance, what does that mean to me specifically? And to identify, you know, one of the things that I worked on with a coach actually, is I asked him, I said, take 24 hours to write down the top 10 things that are most important to you in your life, right? Then after that, take another 24 to 48 hours to narrow that down to 4 to 5, your top 4 to 5. From there, and they may be, you know, what I told him was they may be things like winning, having fun, resilience, you know, bringing joy, you know, creating a competitive environment, right? They may be the generic, quote unquote, standard sports terms, but the really powerful thing is that you define what they mean, right? You know, if we sat down, Sam, you and I wrote down the four same words, we're likely going to define those very differently. So if a coach is really solid in those, what he or she can then do is start infusing that into the culture, live those values in a way that the athletes actually see it come to life, because they're going to define them differently, which is okay. You know, creating that space for them to add their little nuances to it. But for a coach specifically being the core and that leader of that team to say, this is what it means to me. And oh, by the way, this is how it influences how we have conversations with one another. This is how it influences how I make decisions. And being very open with that coaching agreement, whether you want to call it that, or a coaching philosophy, or whatever the case may be, but then communicating that to the athletes to say, this is what it means to me. I would love to hear what it means from you and how we can bring these two things together so that it is a shared culture. And I think that's the other important ingredient too, that it's not just the coach dictating, this is what it means. This is, you know, the only way it's going to go, and to create that two-way street. And I think that is the same way for a bad culture, is to recognize, hey, is it a bad culture because I helped create it? Or is it a bad culture because I'm new to this organization and I've been asked to turn it around? You know, really being really diligent to figure out where those challenges lie. And if you played a role, where is it as a coach? And then doing that same exercise and then creating that two-way street. Where a coach is in that precarious position is they also often have to answer to management and upper level ownership, or whatever, you know, however the club is designed. And they play that really pivotal role. And then being bold enough to go to management, forging that kind of relationship and saying, this is the philosophy, this is the culture I want to create on the pitch, in the pool, whatever the case may be. How can you support me in doing that?
Yeah, I absolutely love that answer of what you've just said there. I think as a coach, it certainly was for me. I went to university and finished university, and the time I finished, they sort of said, when I got into the master's, you should really begin understanding what your philosophy is now. And I was like, that's a problem. I don't know what that is. I don't know what that means. And I sort of did a lot of research online, listening to podcasts, listening to, you know, these top coaches, and sort of taking ideas. And what I realized was that didn't mean anything to me. You know, that was really great in terms of how they ran their teams and they had success in performance or helping people, you know, whatever their goals were. But there was kind of pointless me taking that. You know, it was sort of good for a bit of inspiration, making me thinking, but if I'm just directly copying that, it doesn't mean anything to me. And that kind of links in, you know, to, as you've just said there, in terms of culture as well. Well, what culture do you want to create? If you ask someone that who's sort of relatively new to coaching, it's probably, well, actually, I'm not too sure, you know, which again, maybe goes to a bit of a voodoo word. What did he mean by asking what culture do I want to make? But no, it's a really fascinating answer, that sort of mental foundation. And I went through that process of trying to understand, okay, so why did I get into, you know, coaching? Well, I got into coaching to help people. I didn't get in because I wanted to win every single game. That's sort of great. And probably, if I'm honest with you, got a little bit carried away with that as I had success. But if I go back to the starting point, it was because I wanted to help people. So then when I linked that into the culture I created with this women's team, it was about, look, football's good. We come to play. If we win, that's great. But for me, the most important thing is it's, you know, your development, life skills. We had a lot of youngsters in the team. And the other thing that's really important for me is we've just been through this lockdown period. We've probably all gone through bits of depression. We've probably all struggled. A lot of your uni, you're probably on your own. If you need to talk, just let me know. You know, we'll have a conversation. And over time, what I found is players took me up on that. And that was because the culture was, oh, it's okay to not be okay. I can speak to Sam if I need him. And I was really proud of that. But I had to understand what I wanted to do, what I felt the culture should be. Because I believe in that. I believe that it's important that, you know, we've got to be all right mentally. Winning's great. You should, you know, you you celebrate for 24 hours, 48 hours, as I've heard many coaches say, but the actual helping people and, you know, getting them mentally strong and making them better in their personal lives or helping whatever problem they're doing, that was the main reason I did it. And it took me a while to understand that culture. So
the Sports Coaching Podcast with Sam Holmshaw.
The Performance Package 4.0 by Manscaped has arrived, and oh man, it's a game changer. Inside this package, you will find the Lawnmower 4.0 trimmer, the Weed Whacker ear and nose hair trimmer, Crop Preserver, Ball Deodorant, Crop Reviver Toner, Performance Boxer Briefs, and a travel bag to hold all your goodies. First off, the Lawnmower 4.0. This trimmer is the future of grooming, and there I see the greatest ball trimmer ever. I'm blown away by the performance and craftsmanship of this trimmer. The fourth generation trimmer features a cutting edge ceramic blade to reduce grooming accidents thanks to the advanced SkinSafe technology. The Lawnmower 4.0 is waterproof and also has a 400K LED spotlight. You need a more precise shave. Because this trimmer is waterproof, you can say goodbye to the mess on the bathroom floor. You thought that was good, but you want to take your grooming game to the next level. The Performance Package 4.0 also includes the Weed Whacker Nose and Hair Trimmer. The Weed Whacker is also waterproof and provides proprietary skin-safe technology, which helps reduce nicks, snags, and tugs in those delicate nose holes. The Crop Preserver, below-the-waist deodorant, and the Crop Reviver, below-the-waist toner, change the way you approach your daily hygiene routine. Manscaped even threw in two free gifts to their Performance Package 4.0. We have the Manscaped Boxers, look at these beauties, and the Manscaped Shed Travel Bag. Very nice addition. Bring your comfort and boxers to another level. It's time to take care of yourself, so go to manscaped.com and get 20% off and free shipping with code SCPOD. That's code SCPOD.
You know, like I said, a lot of nodding, I find it absolutely fascinating. And I think that's the process that coaches have got to understand, as you say, what are the core values, but what do those values mean to me? Now, the second thing that I really like as well is you talk about this shared idea of, well, you know, what do the players want? One of the earliest mistakes I made was, this is my, you know, way of doing things and you have to buy into that. And that sort of works with kids, might work with them up to 14, 15 in my experience. When you work with adults, that doesn't work. You have to have that shared culture, shared understanding. So I know you've briefly touched on there, shared culture. How does one begin to do that? But I think the bigger thing, and sort of I guess the bigger question is, how long does that take to foster? Because I do think some coaches, so I kind of think, oh, this should happen straight away. And actually it can be a long time, in my opinion. I don't know your thoughts on that, Lauren.
Gosh, yeah. I think first and foremost, to really strengthen the culture and ensure that it's shared, is not only to have a group discussion once that coaching philosophy, those values have been identified, to really understand, get a feel for where's agreement, maybe where do some people disagree, which is quite all right, but then taking it to the individual level, because that's really part of any sport, regardless of what you do. And that's why this topic is it's challenging, but it's challenging because it takes time. We'll get to that answer too. Is that, you know, there's this group atmosphere, even if it is an individual sport like swimming, where you've got your individual, we all swim our certain things, but then it was part of a team. So having that group dynamic of understanding where they all are on board or maybe not, but then taking it to the individual level and having those really deep conversations of really getting to know each individual, how, like, what makes them tick, what makes them doesn't, or what, you know, what doesn't. And really having a one-on-one conversation about that philosophy to dive deeper into that athlete's mindset and that athlete's world. And to really understand, what is it about that culture that will push them? And where may be the elements of the culture that, you know, they find stressful that might affect their performance. Now, to answer then the how long does this take, well, as my the high school English teacher used to say, it's as long as a piece of string, and it'll take as long as you can articulate your thoughts. And that's the answer, is that there is no preset timeline. And much like you, I agree that it takes time. It's not something that just happens in a moment, because like any relationship, it takes time to cultivate, to understand where someone's coming from, how they're experiencing the world, and then meshing that perspective with yours as a coach. And there are some athletes where that will happen a lot quicker. And there are other athletes that you're going to have to keep chipping away as a coach and supporting them and opening up a little bit more. You know, as an athlete standpoint, they're not always the most open people on the planet, because again, we talked about, you know, opening the, letting people see behind the curtains may be a competitive disadvantage. But it's like, right? I mean, I always use Ted Lasso because it's a phenomenal example. Like, you look at Roy Kent, right? You know, you couldn't break his facade for the longest time, and Ted finally got to do that. You know, he connected with some very quickly, and then Roy was always his, you know, kind of golden city on the hill, but he finally got through to him because he started to understand what was it that made Roy tick. And then he became one of Ted's biggest advocates. And so again, it takes as long as it takes. And it's on you as a coach and the athlete to understand how that, or to be dedicated to how long that could take in order to find that connection and to create that shared culture.
Again, a brilliant answer. And it's one that really fascinates me, because talking about my sort of, you know, last coaching role with a, you know, sort of adult senior women's team, myself and my coaching team, we were driving an hour and a half, 90 minutes to get to this team to coach them and to manage them on a Sunday game. And obviously that was 90 minutes back, so it was a lot of traveling. And the previous manager who'd obviously been there, there was this culture of, you know, turn up when you want to turn up. That seemed to be within the club. It was more of a, I guess, maybe a community club, even though, you know, the above leaders wanted us to win. It had that sort of feel to it. This is about enjoyment, and you come when you feel like you want to come. Now that didn't work for us, because we were driving 90 minutes. So if we're driving 90 minutes, you know, to a training session, we're expecting 16 players, 17, 18 players. You know, we've spent an hour also planning this session. And that was really challenging for us. And I remember the coaches finding that very frustrating. It was frustrating for me. And I'd always say to them, look, we've just got to get it in their heads, and we've got to get them to understand what we're doing, but it's going to take some time. We eventually got to the start of the new season, and I ended up just sitting them down. And I just said, look, from our perspective, we can't have this coming. You know, I know that's how you've been brought up. I know that's what you do here, but it's making us incredibly resentful about coaching you, because we're putting a lot of time and we don't feel like we're getting enough back from you. So I need you to go away and think about what it looks like in terms of commitment. How often are you going to train, you know, 3 times a month, twice a month? We need to know that, and we need to stop turning up late, because there was this culture where they could sort of turn up when they wanted to. But, you know, you need to decide, when are you going to get here? You're going to get here at the start of the session, or are we all going to turn up 30 minutes in? What are we going to do? And my experience of doing that and trying to create this shared culture was, it worked. They seemed to have gone away and thought about it. And it was a young team. There were a lot of 16-year-olds in this team. But it's like they went away and thought, actually, I understand where they're coming from. I understand why they're a little bit upset and shout at us a little bit if we're not, you know, putting a lot of effort in. I understand now why they're getting mad that we're not training all the time. And we ended up getting consistent numbers in. It started to work, and that was a really fascinating period for me, because it was sort of a long route. I'd had to manage other coaches' expectations. I had to keep saying, just be patient. Very difficult as a coach, as you know, you're working with coaches yourself, they're not always patient. But we eventually got there, and it was such a good feeling. You know, we only ended up staying an extra 2 months for different reasons, but we started having that consistency, and it was good, because it felt like we'd sort of got some shared understanding, is what I always say. And I think, you know, just leading on to your point, I think sometimes coaches, don't know about again in the States, but over here, I think coaches always kind of feel they have to set everything, and it's, you know, sort of do as I say. I've never really believed that. I always think it has to be shared together. You know, like when you're going on and you know, in football, you're playing a certain philosophy, way of playing, certain strategies, tactics. We have to have a shared understanding of what that means. And it's only the same in a culture. It has to be a shared understanding. I don't know, you know, if you've got anything or to add on that, Lauren, or your thoughts around that.
Yeah. Well, it's funny that you bring that up, because I think one of the biggest, I always say that athletes have a lot of overdeveloped skills and some underdeveloped skills. I think from an overdeveloped skills, there's the terms of resilience, right? Every athlete knows how to get that, you know, get knocked down and get right back up, which can have some implications on the mental side. But I think one of the most underdeveloped skills is almost decision-making and understanding how to use a voice and how to have a voice, because as an athlete, you're handed a lot of stuff, right? And, you know, I'm significantly older than you, but it was that do as I say, this is the practice, this is what you're going to do. And it's kind of mindless showing up and giving it your all, right? What I always said that I love is that I never had to think about putting it together. I just had to show up and do it. And I think oftentimes that was almost to my disadvantage as I got into my non-athletic life, because sometimes it can be really challenging to make a decision, right? And to critically think about, wait, is this the right thing for me to do right now? Or is, I shouldn't say right, you know, I don't necessarily always believe in right, wrong in terms of like right from a coach's, but is this the most effective thing for me to do right now? Is there something else I could be doing? And even so, you know, I've read several different resources. And one of the best is Every Moment Matters. It's a book by John O'Sullivan, who's a prominent coach over here and who now has a big movement of like changing the perception of sports and how coaches show up. And, you know, he talks about training athletes and oftentimes coaches, as you say, get caught in the trap of, well, this is just what we do. This is what we're doing. And creating this awareness of how to build decision-making in athletes while they're in the game, right? It's not about teaching them a skill or technique. It's teaching them how to play the game and make those decisions. And he makes a really strong point of, you know, if you're running a drill or whatever the case may be, and you come up as a coach and say, what was wrong there? And then you as a coach say, this is what was wrong, versus allowing the athletes to say, well, you know, we could have made this different decision had we done this, and this might have gone, the ball might have gone this way to reach the goal a little quicker, whatever the case may be. But he makes this really strong point of allowing athletes to start making decisions. And I think that will help swing the pendulum of that notion that I just show up, I do what I'm told, and I move on, and take a little bit off of a coach to be like, I'm the one who has to come up everything. It's more about teaching versus handing.
Yeah, I love it. It's so true, because again, I always relate to my background, particularly in school. It was, as I say, you know, all the time. And what I found was, I suddenly got to university and you suddenly, you know, thrown into a flat and you've suddenly got to do everything yourself and you've got to attend. And if you don't attend, they're not going to tell you off because it's on you. You know, you want to study this. And I found it incredibly difficult making decisions because I'd always been guided or said, you know, do this, do that. Or do you think this is the right thing to do? Yes. So it was that external validation. And I had a very difficult time getting through that. And I remember when I got to the third year, I then became very comfortable with making my own decisions. Still struggle a bit with it now, to be fair, like whatever I'm doing in my life, because like we're not conditioned or you know, probably me and you weren't conditioned like that going through school and you know, being youth athletes. But it's so true. I remember the start of this season with this, you know, young team that coached the 15, and we'd played a certain formation, a certain tactic, obviously wasn't working in the midfield. And the player comes up to me and he was playing at the, you know, defensive position. And he said, is it all right if I move into midfield? And I said, why have you asked me? If you see it, do it. And he just looked at me and he just could not understand why it was okay for him to just do it himself. And I found that really interesting with this team this year, because they were so used to do this, do that, lots of feedback. And I've never believed in that. I you know, agree. It's they have to learn to make decisions. If they were to go and play in a first team, there's a good chance to be expected to go and make those decisions. You know, my experience again through uni, that's another reason why I figure it out, you know, within reason, if it's something they can go and figure out, but why not, you know, go and explore. You're 15, it's, for me, it's about learning at that age, you know, go and learn, go and enjoy it, go and make those mistakes. And again, you know, kind of fosters in what we were talking about earlier of it's okay to fail as well. That's another thing that's, you know, always sort of been that culture, isn't it? But no, I agree. I think it's absolutely fascinating. There's certainly got to be an onus, you know, in my opinion, that we should allow athletes to make decisions, because otherwise it's always that external validation. You know, we're in a culture now, aren't we, with Instagram, Facebook, how many likes have you got? If you've got 100 likes, you feel popular. If you've got two, you don't. External validation, it's, you know, I don't know if you've got any sort of finishing thoughts around that, Lauren.
Well, yeah, I mean, that... So what an athlete's entire life is built around is that external validation, right? And that's not necessarily a terrible thing. It's about how we manage that. And, you know, the world of sports has conditioned us that someone wins and someone loses. Someone gets the gold and everyone else doesn't. And I actually was talking about this with someone today, and that was the biggest journey for me outside of athletics, is to learn that just because someone wins doesn't mean I lose. And, you know, while that is not necessarily, that may make sense in the sports world, but looking at it from a perspective of swimming, yeah, I may not have won gold. I may not be standing atop that podium, but what if I swam a best time? What if that race felt really good, you know, and it hasn't for a really long time? And that's what I work on a lot with athletes, is working to establish what success means to them versus always looking to the outside and saying, well, if I didn't win gold, then my performance was absolute crap. But that's not necessarily true. And what's, and take the flip for the example, like you may win gold, but your performance may not have been where you wanted it to be. But we looked at, oh, I got gold, it's fine. Right. And so a lot of working with athletes too is to truly process the experience and see where performance was optimized in that entire experience and where maybe performance wasn't. And, you know, that external validation, I think that is the biggest hurdle to jump. And quite honestly, I think that is the biggest shift to make in the world of sports, because as we start at the beginning of our conversation, we were talking about, we see the Titanic shifting just a little bit to think more about the mental side of the game, but still some of our most major organizations, and I'll speak specifically for the US, you know, if it doesn't have anything directly lead to the gold medal, they don't necessarily want to hear it, but there's not that direct correlation yet between what's running through someone's mind and how that affects their performance. And again, it's that external validation of, if I don't get it, then the money's not going to be there, or, you know, whatever the case may be, because, right, I mean, all of our sports are built like a business and they exist to make money. But that's what I see is really working to define what does success mean for you as an athlete, to really start shifting your own mindset to not rely so much on what the external world is telling you is good or bad.
Yeah, again, it's a brilliant answer. You know, different context. Think about myself at university. I was obsessed with always getting a 70, a first, you know, could never get a 2, one of us, I'd be disappointed with myself. And I remember one of my tutors saying, not quite grasped the point of this. We're not interested about you getting the best grade. That's great for your certificate. It's about the journey and what you're learning. And, you know, you can, and I spent, you know, probably more time in the library writing these assignments up than getting out on the grass and coaching. I remember when I got to a master's, I realized that was a mistake because I was quite underdeveloped in coaching compared to my peers. But again, that was me, how I was brought up. Oh, that really matters. And It again, like, you know, one of the biggest things I learned on the masters personally was the grade didn't really matter as much. You know, it was more about what's the personal journey here. What are we learning? How does this contribute to what I'm doing in my professional career, in my personal career? And now that I've grasped that, it's huge. You know, I work with young football, soccer players who are talented players. They might go on and, you know, maybe be semi-professional, professional players. And they're always, you know, worried about what's everyone thinking about them. Have they performed well? A lot of pressure there. We took them up to this semi-professional club a couple of weeks ago, and as soon as, you know, the next training session, they're all saying, oh, has anyone asked about me? You know, has anyone got any feedback? And it's relax. You're 14, 13, 15. You've time, you know, enjoy this period. So brilliant. Yeah. I've just.
The Sports Coaching Podcast with Sam Holmshaw.
Okay, so it's just time for a quick word from our partners. Manscaped have, delighted to say, have decided to sponsor the podcast. And in exchange for some promotion, Manscaped have provided me, the host, with some free gifts and some free goodies. And so right in front of me here, I've firstly got to tell you about the Lawnmower 4.0. So it's this lovely little trimmer here that you'll be able to see on your screen. Very, very aesthetically pleasing, as you can tell. We have to be careful because this is a PG podcast. You can probably imagine what this is used for. Gentlemen's grooming, particularly down the gentleman's region, should I add, is a tricky process. Having used this myself, tested this product out, I have to say, aside from it looks absolutely fantastic on your bathroom shelf, in terms of its actual purpose, it's absolutely brilliant. Very safe. Wasn't messy. If I just turn it on here for you, you can see that there's a flashlight as well. Obviously, that comes in very handy. I've never had such a time-effective process of grooming. Really nice, neat, good product, very useful, and I was very impressed with the Manscaped Lawnmower 4.0. So you can get 20% off and free shipping with the code SCPOD at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping at manscaped.com and use code SCPOD. Unlock your confidence and always use the right tools with manscaped.com. Seeing yet again, we've got 10 minutes left, as the listeners won't know, but that happened a little bit earlier. Not sure why, it's never happened before. So it probably is signaling, Lauren, that we finish up. So we always finish, you know, on the podcast, a summary of what we've said, any additional thoughts that you want to bring to light, really, any closing thoughts even. I don't know if there's anything you thought about. Well, I've been, you know, mumbling on quite a bit during this podcast, but quite a bit. But, you know, anything that, you know, you'd love to bring, I'd love to hear it for the last segment.
Yeah. So no mumbling whatsoever. You know, first and foremost, you know, to recap some of the highlights is that culture truly is really important. And it's directly linked to performance, not only of the coach and of the staff, but of course, the players who are actually out there doing it. But also that as a coach, to really start this process, it's all about going within yourself and figuring out, you know, where is your performance really optimized and where might you have some opportunities to develop and shift your own mindset to be there within players. And then to really focus on this concept of psychological safety. And for any of the US listeners, right now we're recording this in May, and May is Mental Health Awareness Month. And what I always say is that, you know, we're not solving mental health. If you think about the word health, it's of being sound mind, body, and spirit without disease and or illness. So we're not trying to solve, that's the city on the hill. That's what we're trying to actually strive for. What we're solving is the stress that comes from the constant performance, constantly being on quote unquote stage, constantly being under the microscope. And when that stress isn't addressed, that then leads to deeper things like anxiety. We talk about performance anxiety and the pattern of that. And when that's not addressed, that goes then to the deeper side of depression and other clinically diagnosed conditions. And, you know, to put a lot of the emphasis on how are we supporting athletes in psychological safety and reminding them that you are not weak when it comes to cracks in your mental or emotional foundations. It means you're human, part of that human condition. And the same for coaches. You know, if you have cracks in your mental and emotional foundations, perfectly understandable. Like, you're under the microscope in a different way, right? Your wins and loss record are always scrutinized, whether by your organization, by your fans, by whatever the parents, whatever the case may be. And that it's an opportunity to embrace and to show empathy, right? You know, if you're a parent showing empathy to the coach, the organization, the athlete, if you're an athlete showing empathy to your coach, your organization, your parent, if you're a coach showing empathy to your organization, the athlete, the parents, right? I'm noticing that we're all going through this human condition together, and that, you know, no one has it all figured out. We'll never have it all figured out. And there's an opportunity to really find connection in that space. And then the final parting words is that, you know, we slightly touched on, you know, athletes getting wrapped up in their identity. Their identity becomes their sport. And then beyond that, they can't really see who they are. And the one thing that I really work on with athletes is that your worth and identity were already established well before you got into the sport. The sport is the platform and avenue that allowed you to bring that to the surface. And while it makes sense that though your worth and identity got intertwined with the sport, they started out separate, they will remain separate, and your worth will always be there regardless of what that external validation tells you, whether that be in medals, times, or comments that you receive from other people.
Again, just brilliant points. And try not to rush because we've got that timer TikToking. So forget about the timer a second, but no, it's brilliant. I really like, you know, what you're saying there, particularly we're not solving mental health. You can't solve mental health. You know, you're never going to have the answer to it, but what you can do is you can support athletes. You know, you can bring awareness to it. You can help athletes understand, like, you know, me at 12, 13, obviously going through a bit of depression, didn't understand it. You can help them understand that, and it's okay to go through that. It's normal. It's human. It's such an important point. And I absolutely love that at the end with identity. You know, I was always the swimmer. That's what I was known at school. I had a very difficult time separating from that and being someone different. And then when I decided I wanted to be a footballer, it was, you can't be a footballer, you're a swimmer. You've always swam. You know, similar thing with coaching, like, you know, suddenly became a first team manager of two women's teams. And then that was like my life. And I felt like I couldn't go out on a Saturday and have a couple of drinks with my mates, because what if I see one of the players? And it was like, it took me a year or so to kind of go, hang on a second, like, that's your career. And there's also a personal life to enjoy yourself and have fun and not worry about stupid stuff like that. Luckily it was in lockdown, so I didn't miss too much anyway. But no, I think it's absolutely brilliant. I've got to say, I could talk to you all day. It's been honestly a fantastic conversation. Well worth the 2 or 3 month wait. That's honestly how long we've been trying to chat, haven't we? I've not done too bad long. We've got 4 minutes left. Obviously, got to thank you so much for coming on. The main thing for the listeners is, where can we find you? Social media, you know, how can we see what you're doing and even get in touch? I mean, you know, I always ask that.
Yeah. So my website is www.laurenammon.com. I can also be found on LinkedIn under Lauren Ammon, and Instagram, also fairly active on there at Mrs. Lauren Ammon.
Awesome. Well, it just leaves me to say, Lauren, thanks so much to yourself. I hope you've also found it was worth the wait.
Absolutely. This was a great conversation. Thank you so much for having me, Sam.
No, I've absolutely loved it. Really excited to put this one out. But yeah, thanks so much to you. I think the points you've raised are brilliant. I love talking about culture. I love talking about the mental side and mental health. And I think it's such important topics to you know, make awareness, because you know, it's constantly what we're doing in coaching, making coaches more aware of all this. So brilliant conversation. So again, thanks so much to you. Thanks to all the listeners. You can check us out on YouTube if you'd prefer to watch me and Lauren talk rather than listen to us on an audio. But you know, each to their own, whatever you prefer. But as always, thanks everyone for listening. Please do leave us a review. Let us know how you're finding the podcast. Lauren, thanks again to yourself. And with 2 minutes and 45 seconds to spare, that's the end of the podcast. Thanks, everyone. Speak to you soon.